Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Oh, in these divided political times, you have to wonder how difficult it may be to maintain decorum. Let's give a shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Shout out.
Who?
Seriously, who?
Who are you talking about?
Max Williams from earlier.
Yes, from earlier. Like Henry Kissinger.
From earlier. You're Noel Brown. I'm Ben Bolin. And today we are, with the help of our returning guest, Alex Circa, we are exploring a series of times that people in Congress, in the U.S. Congress, in the halls of power, didn't feel their words were adequate to navigate situations.
Yeah, they in some cases entered into fisticuffs, like the fighting Irish, you know, a little fella. What would he call that pose? Well, yeah, it seems very impractical, or maybe it's completely practical. It's like one of the fists for blocking, for the old 1-2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hook and the jab.
I think whoever drew it didn't know how to do 3D drawing.
No, that's an underhanded boxing.
Oh, it is
style.
Definitely. No, it's back in the day. You see it all the time in old movies. Mm-hmm. It's like a very specific old timey boxing pose, and it requires fancy footwork too. You know, you think these beefing congressmen got into some little tappity dancing when they were fighting each other?
Well, we're about to see. They certainly were not practicing bipartisanship, right? The old can't we all just get along?
We can't. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler. Yeah, let's go to Deborah Caldwell in a great article, 11 Historic Fights Worse Than the Sequester. Deborah points out Congress has always been a wild and woolly place. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, you know, the majority of people in the United States are not, in fact, members of Congress. We can't even get elected to the House, right? Which is
unless you're a member of the, I think, New Hampshire State of House Representatives, which is like 450 people for New Hampshire. Just want to put that note in here, right here.
Mm. Classic Granite State. Max with the facts.
Who's that sneaking in the phone?
It's Max!
And he's full of knowledge just for you right now. Here he comes.
It's Max with the facts!
We've got several different situations here. This is, Noel, a bit of a listicle episode, would you say?
Yeah, it is indeed. So let's go ahead and jump right in with the 1800 election that nearly led to a civil war. One thing that I think we've all experienced is sort of the rose-colored glasses approach to history that is often the case in like early childhood education, middle school even, where it's sort of like, oh, you know, all the founding fathers were pals and they were just hanging out and, you know, it was just all sunshine and roses.
And getting drunk together.
And getting, well, that probably
well, that part was
true. That's why they didn't
tell
us.
That part was true. Yeah.
You know, despite coming from different backgrounds, different political ideologies and belief systems, they all were able to just get along and chop it up and make nice and get things done, right? No, not so much, right?
No, they hated each other.
That cartoon version, though, is often the way it's portrayed when you're, you know, just learning about this stuff.
Just like the first Thanksgiving, right? There's a bit of myth-making afoot because we know that these guys often did not get along, put diplomatically. I also will find it unendingly hilarious how back in the day, if you ran for president and you won, then your vice president would be the guy who ran against you. It's a very weird way to set up a crew. But as you were saying, well, this stuff comes to a head. There are legendary disagreements between founding fathers, and two of the guys who beefed the hardest, really got beefed up. They were beefing, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And it goes to exactly like our culminating moment here is the election of 1800. We can go to Encyclopedia Virginia for a, dare I say, blow by blow.
Oh, you dare. And I will back you up on this. So the Democratic Republicans had won the election. Again, I always get a little flummoxed when it comes to like early versions of Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. In this case, it was the Democratic Republicans, which seems like some sort of weird kaiju hybrid of political leanings. But they had, in fact, cinched the election. But unfortunately, it wasn't clear who was actually going to be the president. This was something that was totally TBD. And in 1800, this constitution that we've heard so much about did have a stipulation that each elector be awarded two votes and that whichever candidate got the majority of votes would be president, while the second place, the runner-up, the also-ran, would be vice president.
Great idea. Again, he says with sarcasm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So these electoral votes, this is basically the founding of the Electoral College, right?
This is like the second time and the first time was very flawed because the first two elections weren't really elections.
I'm just saying what we know is the Electoral College today is a little different than this, but this is sort of the like bones of it.
Yeah, you're right. We could call this a precedent of sorts. I would argue it is a precedent indicative of the deep structural problems with the Electoral College in general. Jefferson is hanging out after these electoral votes are counted, and all those Democrat-Republican folks, who again, as you pointed out, are the same party at this point, they wanted Jefferson to be president. They were like, this is the guy. We picked him. Jefferson has 73 electoral votes, but plot twist, Shyamalan, so does Aaron Burr. And that's the one all these guys have picked to be vice president. they were worried about taking off Burr. He's kind of a hothead. He does shoot people in duels. And this is way before the musical made him catchy to the American public. We've talked in the past about his troubled career, and the Democratic Republicans kind of messed up their ground game, their electoral game. They were supposed to arrange for at least one of their people not to vote for Burr so they could say, without pissing Burr off, good hustle, bud. Your vice president, Jefferson, just has more votes.
That's a little greasy, isn't it?
It's super greasy. I mean, that's politics.
Oh, it really is. Yeah, and again, a system that is relatively easily gamed when you have these sort of cahoots, I guess. Is that a thing? In mm-hmm. cahoots? I'm just going to call it cahoots. That's a fun word.
Yeah, you can
Isn't
cahoot.
That a game? I think there's a board game called cahoots.
There's a board game called, Alex is agreeing, yeah.
We got a solid nod from Circa.
Very fun.
I'm sure. I definitely remember playing it at least once. I'm the kind of guy, by the way, as an aside, that buys board games and never placed them. Giant chest of board games that I've never been opened because I get one that I think is super nerdy and fun. I'm like, this is confusing. I can't figure out how to play.
Got
to
have me over.
I love Murder these. On I love you know, Haunted Hill or whatever.
Sure, I'll come over. I'll read all the rules. I will strictly and immediately tell everyone the rules.
You're a game.
I will play Blockus with you guys for money.
Blockus is awesome, but I lost a couple of the pieces, and now my set is useless.
Well, I've got one.
Let's hang out. That's a game that's so fun. It's not that big a deal to have to buy it a few times. But cahoots aside, that like you said, this doesn't really pan out the way that they anticipated.
No. You know, because these guys are going head-to-head against a group called the Federalists, which you might remember from their famous papers. They were named very creatively. So the Federalist Party saw this as an opportunity to block us, Jefferson, out of the presidency. And they really did not want Jefferson to be president. So they said, look, we'll do whatever. You know, there is no expense that we are scared of here. Yet again, that old document, the Constitution, had some rules, had some board game rules for the future of America. And this little piece of paper specified that a tie has to be resolved by a specific group, the House of Representatives, voting by state. And the Federalists love this because they control several delegations in the House of Reps.
Yeah, tiebreaker rule. Pretty common in most board games and politics. So that being the case, Ben, with the Federalists controlling some of these key House delegations, they were able to block the election of Jefferson for 35 of these roll call votes over the course of 6 days. And if you can imagine, this is almost like filibuster level obstructionism, right?
Well, Dungeons and Dragons would call their alignment lawful evil at this time because they're weaponizing parliamentary procedure.
That's right. Exactly.
I mean, how many votes did it take McCarthy to get in there? Because that's a good comp. It's like how many took McCarthy. I think that was like 16. So we're thinking about like more than twice as many votes.
So they're saying the Federalists are they go to Aaron Burr. Picture a smoky back room.
Yeah.
And we could get a sound effect, whatever the Illuminati version is.
There we go. Smoky sound effect. Doesn't really make smoke. Smoke I guess. Is sort of inherently soundless.
Well, let's play it now. Let's trigger some jazz. Synesthesia. Yeah.
Kind of a speakeasy type vibe.
Far before the invention of speakeasies and jazz. You nailed it, though. Yeah. So we're going for the vibe, folks. And thank you for having our backs. These guys go to Burr. In this back room, and they say, look, we'll help you quid pro quo if you will do a couple things for us, you know, scratch some backs, we'll scratch yours. You don't like Jefferson either.
No.
And
that sucks.
And outside this room, by the way, there's the other political party of the time, the Democratic Republicans. Uh-huh. And they're going bang, bang, bang on the door. They're cop knocking on the door. And they're like, you guys are stealing the election. And, you know, that's super mids of you.
Yeah. Wow. This is way before the invention of the term mids, by the way.
Yes.
We're in it for style.
Poetic license.
I don't know. We're talking about Jefferson here. Are we sure it's before the invention of the term mids?
Well,
did Jefferson invent the term mids?
The concept of mids is eternal, but I don't think that
you
term
guys
really
are rizzing
came into
so
fashion.
Hard right now. Shout out to Oxford's word of the year.
Word of the year. I only just found out that it's short for charisma.
It is.
I did not know.
It is.
That. Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
It riz. Yeah.
Charisma. Mm-hmm. To quote Matt Berry.
Spelled differently, right? R-I-Z-Z. Mm-hmm. We don't want to make an enemy of big O-E-D, Oxford English Dictionary.
Apparently the kids also refer to people that have a lot of Riz as being Rizzlers, like the Rizzler, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like a Batman villain of style.
Shout out
That's
to
That's his
RZA.
Superpower. really fetching, you know?
So these rumors start flying around. With, again, this sort of rarefied air of people who run the United States. And folks are talking. The streets are talking. And the streets are saying these Federalists are going to put a member of their own party into the presidency. They're going to do a little finger move, right? Chaos is a ladder, et cetera, from Song of Ice and Fire or Game of Thrones. And so Jefferson tells Adams, any attempt to defeat the presidential election will be met with, quote, resistance by force and incalculable consequences.
Wow, them's fighting words.
It's definitely a threat. It's a weird one.
So the Democratic-Republican governors are absolutely livid. Mm-hmm. And it starts to become pretty clear that they are going to gather up their forces in the form of militias, which is important because there wasn't really an official, actual facts, you know, government-funded, mandated army, right? There was just a series of these loose kind of collections of forces.
Well, they're coming off of a revolution which taught them to distrust large armies from, say, the British Empire, etc. Sure. So the governors in this time are in the late 18th century, early 19th century. They're kind of suzerains, right? They have these fiefdoms that they're running. And so they gather up their gangs and they say, look, if the Federalists steal this election from Jefferson, whom we have all chosen to be the president, then we're going to roll on you, you know, if you want the smoke. And there's a letter from March 21st, 1801, that is a great example of this from Pennsylvania.
It is where you start seeing terms like usurping or usurpation, which is also a very Song of Ice and Fire term. Usurper! Mm-hmm. I called you a usurper. But really quickly, you guys, Is what they were doing illegal, or was it just kind of in bad taste? You know what I mean? It was just sort of a dick move.
In
was
terms of fixing illegal at this the point? Election?
No, fair enough. The law is sort of being written as they go. But
question, I mean, though, like in terms of fixing the election or right, in terms of raising a militia?
No, in terms of fixing the election, like did they? The idea of them stealing it seems more of an alarmist kind of propagandistic way of talking trash about your rivals.
You know? I mean, also no, because like it was just a flawed system.
That's what I mean. But they agreed on the system. You know, it just happened to not work in their favor this time.
Also, let's point out that this is like this is an example of no honor among thieves, right? Because
sure.
They've already kind of determined who the president will be, and they did not ask the entirety of the American public. At this point, they also did not consider a lot of people living in North America or the United States to be people. So they're building atop a flawed Jenga tower already. And I'm with you on usurper and so on. Governor Thomas McKean, Pennsylvania, classic guy. You know him. He said, look, I'm going to take the Pennsylvania militia, the Penny Boys, and we are going to arrest anybody anti-Jefferson, and we're going to charge them with treason. And then there's another letter from Virginia.
It's very British of them. Don't you think his behavior feels very kind of British crown moves?
Only if they are going to threaten people with being drawn and quartered.
All they knew was
treason and this witch hunt kind of atmosphere.
Exactly. I completely agree.
All they knew was in terms of governance, all they knew was systems like monarchies, aristocracies, and the French Revolution, right? And then their own revolutions. So they were kind of, just to be honest, they were improvising. They were improvising. And they weren't sure what to do in the long term, but they were sure what they didn't want to happen. And some of these folks want Aaron Burr. Some of these folks want Jefferson. They've got this back and forth of correspondence. We're not talking about, when we say militia, by the way, we're not talking about getting a posse together. It's not like Alex, Max, Noel, and yours truly saying, oh, we're going to January 6th up to Washington on this Jefferson thing. We're talking about Pennsylvania having 22,000 dudes ready to go beef. And then we're talking about 60,000 trained militia from Massachusetts who those guys were veterans. They would absolutely demolish that outnumbered mob from Pennsylvania. And these folks are these are farmers. It's like a swords to plowshare situation. The folks from Pennsylvania and Virginia, they are literally practicing military maneuvers and drills with corn stalks. So this is where we go to one of Noel's favorite musicals, Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah, or Hamilton for sure. It's not, you know, I get it. It's good. I just didn't finish it. It doesn't mean that I didn't like it. I liked what I saw, but I got distracted. I'm gonna have to go back to it. Now that it's not, you know, the hottest ticket in town anymore, maybe I can actually
the hype
see it
ruins things.
You know, on stage. That is part of it too. Yeah, the hype. I think I'm separated enough from the hype now that if I went and saw it in a theater, like a proper show, I think that's the way to experience something like that.
Hype ruins
speaking
things.
About hype, yeah. Are you guys excited for the thing that we're all hyped about in April that we were talking about on the side?
Sure. Yeah. Death cap for QD and postal service.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
My second time going. Mm-hmm. We're all been buying tickets on.
Speaking of hype ruining things, let me show to you Exhibit A, folks. This is a paper straw.
Oh, no hype.
Here's the problem with paper straws.
They're terrible.
Look at that. Look
gotta
at
go
this.
Rubber.
Look at
gotta
this.
Gotta go rubber, man.
So what about metal, you got well. You don't like metal.
No, I can't.
Metal
I can't.
Straws are weird.
Well, I've got a Alex has a metal. All right,
a little ASMR.
I like hey, and a Bucky's mug.
Thank you for the ASMR. So
sponsor me.
So we do owe a debt of gratitude to the founding fathers, and we want to let you know. Like, there are so many of us listening right now who are going, get to the fight, get to the fight. Alexander Hamilton comes in, and it's so hard to say that without singing it. He weighs in on Jefferson's behalf, and he says, look, my brother in Christ, I get it. Jefferson is a contemptible hypocrite. That last part's a quote. But we cannot adopt a violent system that undermines this American government. And Aaron Burr, because Hamilton always had to slide in a neg on Aaron Burr. They were very insecure. And he says, look, Burr also has extreme and irregular ambition. He's got no principle, public or private, which was a real, like, these guys would have been savages on Twitter. And Hamilton says, look, the Federalists are playing a foolish game. You kind of have to give Jefferson the presidency because we all agreed on it. And to do otherwise now is anathema to what we proposed this government should function as.
So eventually, one of the fellas that Hamilton wrote to, one James A. Baird, told his colleagues that he would withdraw support from Burr and throw his support behind Jefferson, allowing him to win in order to prevent this. Again, this like a civil war, you know, it's essentially what we would be looking at. And no Federalists at the end of the day voted for Jefferson. Several, however, Federalist members of the House of Representatives, they positioned their state delegates to support Jefferson. And on February the 17th of 1801, on the 36th attempt at this vote, Jefferson won by a 10-4. Margin. Two states abstaining. And Baird later claimed that Jefferson had promised to maintain a particular flavor of government, specifically referring to the monetary system, the fiscal system, and also to maintain, this is probably a term that you remember hearing when you studied the Constitution, a strong Navy, and not to can any of the Federalists who, you know, had potentially made themselves target for that kind of retribution.
He said he wouldn't.
He said. He yeah. said. Right.
He exactly. said a lot
no,
of things.
No honor among thieves, to your previous point. But Jefferson claimed till the bitter end that no such deal had ever existed.
Federalist? Who were those guys? Anyway, it's March 4th, says Jefferson, 1801. I am now the third president of the United States, a war that didn't quite happen. Now, we know that a lot of us are listening today and saying, all right, so your first example is the time there was almost a fight. But what about, you know, what about some street level fisticuffs? You know, what about some varminting out in the halls of power? This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When your child fights sleep, it can feel like a battle you'll never win. Imagine a bedtime routine you all look forward to, where you cuddle in and let the stress of the day melt away. Welcome to Sleep Tight Stories, a calming weekly podcast that brings bedtime stories, cuddles, and comfort to families worldwide. The stories are quirky, relatable, and spark wonder without overstimulation, so listeners can fall asleep and stay asleep. Each episode is narrated by me, Cheryl McLeod, a second grade teacher, and written by my husband, Clark, an eternal second grader at heart. Tune in tonight and bond over a story before drifting off to sleep. Make bedtime the sweetest part of your day. Sleep Tight Stories. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is our next example, right before the Civil War. One of the big issues in American discourse is the concept of slavery, the idea that you could somehow rationalize removing all the rights of a human being by saying that they are somehow not human and instead that they are property. And one side of the argument said, look, this is part of American law. And the other side, which won, by the way, spoilers, thankfully, the other side said, slavery is super fucking gross. it needs to be outlawed. Thanks for the beep, Max. And obviously, no one here, and hopefully no one listening, is going to argue otherwise. But at this time, we have to introduce a heel, as wrestling would call him, a pill. He's a real dish of cold, rubbery eggs, John C. Calhoun.
I think John C. Calhoun is the namesake of a very short and unimpressive expressway in my hometown of Augusta, Georgia.
How long is it?
He's from South Carolina, so.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah, it's just like the road that you take to get from like one side of town to downtown. So I would say no longer than maybe 2 miles, three miles max. It's the John C. Calhoun Expressway. It's
Calhoun is one of these guys that for like a large swath of this part of history is just always present. Like him and Henry Clay are always present. And oddly enough, John Quincy Adams is always around too. He did a lot after being president. He was around for a while after being president.
We need to talk about Millard Fillmore. vice president 2 days after infamous Cold Eggs and later Expressway namesake John C. Calhoun dies on March 31st, 1850. There's this guy. His name's Millard. He's vice president. He also kind of stinks. And he does the funeral for, thank you for that thumbs down, Max, I agree with you. He does the funeral for Calhoun in the chambers of the Senate. And everybody is kind of on edge, right? What's going to happen? The leader is dead. This guy who is ostensibly in charge now, his name's Millard. Are you kidding me? And so amid this chaos, Vice President Fillmore addresses the Senate. He does a live show and he says, look, when I first became the presiding officer of the Senate last year, I didn't think I would have to maintain order in a group of adults. He looked around and he was like, guys, you're supposed to be grown-ups. You're supposed to be courteous to each other. You're supposed to be collegiate. You know, order must prevail.
Well, it's one of these things where, like, you know, with the recent presidential situations, let's just say in this country, where, it's easy to take for granted how much just decorum and tradition is literally all is holding the whole thing together. And when people decide to ass out and just totally ignore that stuff, mm-hmm. There's not much you could do about it.
It's so weird, man. I remember several years back, someone got trapped up in parliamentary procedure, and they stood up and they were like, the honorable member of so-and-so apologizes for offending the honor of the gentleman from so-and-so. And I thought, you guys hate each other. Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
No question.
But like, can you imagine being in a situation where someone says, you have offended my honor, and then there's a vote? And then the other person has to stand up and be like, I apologize for offending your honor.
Well, even just the idea of getting censured, you know what I mean? It's right. Sort of like a public pillorying, you know, or a slap on the wrist. It's basically like officially embarrassing you in front of your friends.
Mm. So in its earliest years, the U.S. Senate had given the presiding officer a superpower. If you are in charge of the Senate, you can call these other senators out. You can be like, that's a no-no. That is inappropriate language or behavior. And the full Senate didn't have to vote. There was just this one guy who was like, your vibe's off. And because of John C. Calhoun, this practice changes in 1828.
You have to say my line.
All right. Well, Max, how would you describe John C. Calhoun?
Real-life Emperor Palpatine. And side note, if you guys want to get a laugh, every single time Calhoun is mentioned in this brief, there's a different photo of him, and they all have a theme.
Is he wearing an ominous hood and cloak?
He just looks like the most evil dude in every photo and every painting of this man. I guess there's no photos of it, but every painting of this man, he looks like the most evil dude ever.
He looks like he's
and such.
Yeah,
and
these
he
are
was like so racist and whoa, so yeah, pro-slavery.
Yeah. Like, he looks like he doesn't blink. He looks like he's always mad at someone to the left or the right of the portrait.
I bet he used to beat people with sticks.
This is the guy who was so mean, so racist, and so crazy that Andrew Jackson was freaked out by this dude.
Mm-hmm. He kind of has a bizarro Andrew Jackson look about him.
He was Jackson's first VP and then quit and formed his own party to oppose Jackson. He's one of the guys who started the Whig Party.
I always think when I see these portraits of guys who are not looking directly at the audience, I always think maybe they have wonky eyes. Like Calhoun looks like he might have some walleye
maybe going on. And honestly, in this painting that I'm looking at, he basically is wearing a spooky cloak.
Yeah. Well, it was a different time.
Yeah, for sure.
They didn't have central heating. But so because of Calhoun, who was a little bit too active for the rest of the Senate, because of him, the Senate changed this rule and they said, look, everybody should be able to call someone out if they're behaving offensively. And I think we can all agree that kind of accountability is key. If the Senate objected to the vice president's ruling on a certain call, right? If he was being too tyrannical or so on, then they could vote and they could overrule him. And they could say, actually, the guy you're mad at isn't being a dick. He raised a really good point. You're outvoted. Let's move on to other business. Order will prevail. Vice President Fillmore didn't quite vibe with this. In 1850, he says, look, a lot of our fellow senators, a lot of these honorable gentlemen, seem reluctant to hold each other to order. So what I'm going to do is quell this. I'm going to contain the first sparks of disorder before they blossom into a fire, right? And so so he said the following quote, which seems a little hardcore. I'm interested in your thoughts here.
A slight attack or even insinuation of a personal character often provokes a more severe retort, which brings out a more disorderly reply, each senator feeling a justification in the previous aggression.
Okay, this is an unpacker, guys. A slight attack or even insinuation, okay, of a personal character. So don't talk trash. If you do, it may provoke a serious reaction. Someone's going to come at you.
Right.
Which may bring out a more disorderly reply, each senator feeling justification in the previous. So this is basically a chain of aggression.
That's what he's saying. Chain, chain, chain. So the idea is that there would be this sort of arms race, for lack of a better word, of insults leading to chaos in the Senate, which could very well lead to instability in the nation. The question is, what is insinuation, right? So-and-so said such and such, and I took that personally. Yeah, but it turns out old Millie's, shout out to hip-hop fans in the audience, old Millie's was correct. 2 weeks after he makes this statement, the things he predicted happened. He said to a Missouri Senator, Thomas Hart Benton, he said, you're out of order. And then a guy from Kentucky named Henry Clay, you may recognize from earlier stories, he says, the vice president is out of pocket. He's making an attack on the power and dignity of this noble institution, the Senate. And then everybody else is like, rabble, 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 rabble.
So in this ensuing debate, there is quite a nasty exchange that takes place between Benton and Henry Foote. I'm going to go with Foote because it just sounds good.
I like both of them.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever. Benton, who's a bit of a bullish fellow, likes to throw his weight around literally and figuratively. He pushes aside his chair and begins to approach Mr. Foote, who, if the name of is any indication, is a bit of a slight fellow. At this point, the sight of this, you know, steam locomotive of a man coming at him, full bore, Foote decides he needs to defend himself with not his brawn, but with, you know, this concealed pistol that he's got on.
He's strapped. Mm-hmm. He is strapped.
He's
can't
toting
get
a biscuit.
Right, there it is. We can't get away with late books at the library, but this guy's rolling up into the Senate with a firearm.
They didn't have metal detectors back then.
They did not. And so everybody's losing their mind. And old steam truck Benton is bellowing, I have no pistols. Let them fire. Stand out of the way and let the assassin fire.
Oh, yeah. Cousin of Steamboat Willie, no doubt. That's amazing. So these boy, he this guy is a is he's got you know what do you I'm doing the hand thing. You guys
the
know
chutzpah.
What I mean. He's got the chutzpah. He's got the cajones. And he is not he will not be stopped. He continues on towards him. And then at this point, I guess
this is
enough for the presiding officer Fillmore to adjourn. It's like, okay.
I love how Max puts it too. Quickly entertain a motion to adjourn. Yeah. So like this one guy's this huge dudes running at this other guy. He's like, shoot me then. Shoot me. Do it. And then this guy is...
Burst a little bit of a bubble to make it even funnier. I didn't put that. The U.S. Senate put that.
Oh, that's even better. Oh, my gosh. We paid for that beautiful line, taxpayers. Quickly entertained a motion to adjourn, which literally means while this chaos was happening, Vice President Millard Fillmore was like, hey, should we get lunch? Are we done? Clap, 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 clap with a gavel. And everybody else who wasn't, you know, shooting or being shot at was like, yeah. Things took a turn. And
that man became president.
And that man became president. Noel, there is another example we have, and I love the way you set this up earlier. You talked about beating people with sticks.
Oh, yeah. I just, you know, thought that Calhoun had that look about him.
Something in the eyes, right?
Yeah, in the eyes, a bit of a wildness. And also that cloak, man, like Harlem Globetrotter style. You could probably conceal quite a large stick in there that he would just carry around. Sort of a shillelagh of sorts, you know?
Oh, there we go. Nice reference. Yeah. And so probably the one of the most infamous physical altercations in U.S. congressional history occurs on May 22nd, 1856.
Yeah, and as it turns out, there's an official name for beating someone with sticks. It is often referred to as caning.
Shout out, it is a brutal
and barbaric practice. Of course, a holdover from slave times as well. Like, I mean, people were beaten on their backs until they had bloody stripes and stuff like that. I believe it's a tactic that still happens in some countries, Singapore, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm.
Singapore, multiple, right. Actually multiple other countries. And when you specifically beat people on the soles of their feet such that they cannot walk or run away, that torture is bastinado. Ah. None of these are allowed, technically, in political discourse in the halls of Congress. The U.S. doesn't cane people. But it turns out some of the kingmakers of the U.S. government did get into a cane altercation. This would be, I believe, aggravated assault, technically, because there was a use of a weapon.
Yeah, that's right. In the halls of government, no less. What led to this beef, the inciting event, occurred 3 days prior when Senator by the name of Charles Sumner from Massachusetts, who was an anti-slavery Republican. Whoop, whoop. Addressed the Senate, spoke to the Senate on the issue of whether Kansas should be allowed to enter the Union as a slave state or as a free state. Man, can you believe this was stuff that had to be discussed? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I know it's just bonkers to me sometimes how relatively recent some of these barbaric parts of history, you know, were.
Right. I mean, they had to do this wild dance anytime they wanted to add a state in, because they had to have just as many slave states as free states. So
3/5 compromise, etc. It was really nasty stuff. And
to your point, it's right there in history. It's not that long ago.
No.
History is always closer than it looks in the rearview mirror.
I mean, think about it. There is a living man whose father was born around then. As we learn in the John Tyler episode.
And there are people listening today who were alive during state-supported segregation, right? This stuff matters. So as you were saying, Noel, this guy, Sumner, he makes a speech. It's called, or it's titled, Crime Against Kansas. And in his speech, Sumner name checks two Democratic senators. And
calls them out, puts them on blast. Right?
Yeah, he calls for them. He sends for them, you would say, in UK hip hop. They're Stephen Douglas of Illinois and Andrew Butler of South Carolina. And while these guys are in the room, Sumner is talking trash. And it's not like a friendly, Friars Club roast. Or if it is like a Friars Club roast, it's like the Chevy Chase roast, where you can tell no one likes him.
No one likes it. Yeah. Right. To this day, I don't think he's a very popular guy. Ben, can I say this trash talk, or at least? Oh,
please,
my God.
Please, you got to do it. What does he say to Douglas?
Serious disses, man. Holy cow. These are like beast level cutdowns. He calls him a noisome, squat, and nameless animal. Not a proper model for an American senator.
And people are
noisome.
Like, yeah, people are like, oh, snap. And then he has this moment in his speech where he's like, and I'm not done. I do not yield my time. Andrew wild. Butler, South Carolina. Oh, my gosh. He says, you have taken a mistress who,
what?
Though ugly to others, is always lovely to him, though polluted in the sight of the world, is chaste in his sight. I mean, the harlot, slavery.
Oh, snap. Okay, I thought he was really like airing his dirty laundry, you know?
He worked on it, though.
He got there, too. Yeah.
That's what Hamilton did. Hamilton one time took an article out and was like, these 10 sex workers that I talked to, they all say that Aaron Burr is, you know, their favorite client.
Yeah,
sure.
Hamilton, the creator of the listicle, I believe.
Absolutely. Oh, man, the harlot, slavery. That's good. Although I will say, not very sex positive, a little bit misogynistic, but it kind of works for the time.
Well, they were, they were all gas, no brakes. And they were all still, of course, very prejudiced. There's another guy in the crowd. You know, that's why you have to be careful with roast and stand-up comedy. There's a guy named Preston Brooks. He's important to this story because he is boys with Butler. He's from South Carolina as well. And if he did things the quote-unquote right way for the time, he would have challenged Sumner to a duel, and they would have met with, you know, pistols or rapiers at dawn or something like that. Instead, he picked up the kind of cane that people like him use to beat dogs and also probably other people. So he waits until Senate has wrapped for the day, and he walks into the chamber and he finds Sumner.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Picture it like walking into a lecture hall after class, and Sumner is putting his stamp on various copies of his speech where he dissed these guys, and then Brooks, catching him unaware, slams his cane onto Sumner's head. He doesn't even waste time. Like, nothing cinematic, like hitting a hand or something. Like, you're not going to stamp that one.
Yeah. Have you guys seen most or any of The Sopranos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a really incredible scene where Tony, he's got this, like, I think he's a lawyer, or no, he's a politician, actually. And he finds out that he's sleeping with Tony's ex, Gumar, or whatever.
I remember,
And he just walks into the dude's house while he's in his underwear and just takes his belt off and just starts, like, slamming him, you know, while the guy's, like whimpering in the corner. That is how I picture this going. That is an excellent scene, by the way.
It's wallop after wallop. Headshots. And Brooks is like, bam, South Carolina. Bam, I'm a jerk. Bam, bam, bam. And Sumner is recovering from this head wound, and he's running about trying to protect himself.
It's not funny. It's horrific, really.
If you've ever been in a fight like this, you know they typically don't last very long. This guy is bleeding. He is likely concussed. Head wounds are just super gushers. He has to be carried away. He can't walk on his own power. And Brooks, when he's done with this, he walks calmly out of the chamber. It's like, if since we're doing anachronistic music, probably in his head, there's something like Easy Like a Sunday Morning playing.
I like that. Yeah.
He's like, enemies. Right.
And it's interesting because both of these guys, to their respective cronies, kind of become like the symbolic kind of heroes.
So weird. Oh my God.
It's super weird. And I believe, doesn't the dispenser of the beating resign pretty quickly?
And what happens next?
He gets reelected. But then he dies.
at the age of
37. So it's not all bad news.
And that's what he's most famous for. Yeah. And Sumner does live. Sumner takes some time recovering. He eventually returns to the Senate, and he serves there for another 18 years. This turns out to be somewhat prescient, somewhat of an omen for the future of the United States, which is hurtling headlong toward an actual civil war.
Yeah. Oh, it was bound to happen sooner or later. I think we've got one more really juicy one involving fisticuffs to take us home with.
Yeah, let's take it home.
Best one. Okay. It's the best one.
We saved it. So the most infamous floor brawl in the history of the U.S. House of Representatives. This is, by the way, from the U.S. House of Reps website. This thing happened when members of the House debated the Kansas Territory's pro-slavery constitution late into the night of February 5th through 6th, 1858. And right before 2 a.m., a Pennsylvania Republican named Galusha Grow, real name, Galusha Grow.
You big galoot.
Right there, perfect, And gets into a tangle with a Democrat from South Carolina named Lawrence Kiett.
Well, it's interesting, too, because like several of these stories, or at least this one and the last one, really show you the tension that was building around, you know, slavery and the issue, the political divide that was coming very, very clear and was going to just come to a boiling point. And I think that's largely why he gets so many of these like actual brawls taking place
during this time.
Really,
period.
Really sensitive. You know, a little spark could just set off a whole forest fire. And that's exactly what happened.
happens here. On February 6th, 1858, in an odd precursor to the Civil War, writes Will Fermia for MSNBC, the House of Representatives dissolved into a bench-clearing brawl.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like where, so I guess a bench-clearing brawl is in a sport where like all your buddies come to your aid because mm-hmm. like you're getting your ass kicked out on the basketball court.
The whole team
I almost said basketball
in.
Field because I'm totally a sportsman.
It's very common in baseball. So when vice break out in baseball, is that the bench will all come out. But when it gets really serious, the people from the bullpen, which is out in the outfield, will run in and get in the fight as well.
Got it.
Shout out Philadelphia.
Exactly. Yeah, they're the only ones actually ever really throw punches.
Yeah, famously chill city.
Side note, I'm writing an episode, and you guys don't even know about this one yet, where it talks about how Pennsylvania is just extra.
I've got this discontinued soda stuff too. I know all of us are excited about that.
You're doing that one? Cool.
I'll find
I think I'm gonna do karaoke. That one too. It was reported at the time by the Congressional Globe that in an instant the House was in the greatest possible confusion, with more than 30 of its members joining in to this brawl. You know, like literally, picture the cartoon fight with the giant cloud of dust, and like people are jumping in and coming out, crawling out, being dragged back in, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
giant onomatopoeia texts on screen, you know,
raining cats and dogs of punches, fisticuffs, uppercuts, you know, hooks and jabs,
karate chops,
probably, you know, maybe a couple roundhouses. I like the idea of one dude launching himself and doing that full like 2-foot kick, you know, or why not a Liu Kang bicycle kick at this point? It's
clotheslinings, you know,
right. You know, inventing moves that the WWE will make billions off of in the future. Northern
sweepings of the leg,
Northern Republicans and Free Soilers team up against Southern Democrats. And I got to tell you, there are probably a lot of grudges getting settled here. There are probably a lot of sneak shots at people who didn't like each other from the jump. And some of those examples are lost to history, but it was absolutely a brawl. The Speaker, a South Carolina Democrat named James Orr, was just uselessly hitting the gavel. It was like, order, order, order.
Order. Man. Orders.
And they wouldn't listen.
Order's not on the menu today, buddy.
They weren't listening because they were busy beating the snot out of each other. So eventually, he leans to the sergeant at arms, a guy named Adam J. Glossbrenner, and he says, you know, look, if people aren't listening, arrest them.
Yeah.
Get him out of here.
Have you guys ever been to like a, I guess for lack of a better term, minor league wrestling event?
Yes.
Like, a lot of times there are some very interesting and problematic political of like, there'll be like the Lucha Libre guy fighting like a Mr. America, you know, and it's clearly a kind of creepy commentary on, you know, border protection. I picture this whole scenario should be made into a wrestling event with all of these, you know, government reps just having at each other, you know, pulling off their powdered wigs. I don't know if they wore powdered wigs, but I'm just, you know, it's a good
image.
Well,
if they were fancy, they wore powdered wigs. Otherwise, everyone would know they had lice. Please check out the very first episode of our show, Why Do British Lawyers Wear Those Wigs? They're called perukes. Okay. If you are James Orr at this point, then you're doing the right thing. You have followed your order of operations. And if you are Adam Glossbrenner, now the onus is on you. Now the ball is in your court. What are you going to do? He's got the house mace, which you guys know about. It's symbolic. It's kind of ridiculous. It's a fancier cane. And so he, according to this MSNBC article we quoted earlier, he walks into the fray and he is getting in fights. These people, by the way, to the point about hair pieces, they are literally snatching wigs. John Bowie Knife Potter and Cadwallader Washburn rip the wig. They snatch the wig off a Democrat from Mississippi named William Barksdale. And then Potter like holds it up and he goes, I've scalped him. Super classy. Super classy. This is like a world star moment. You know, if this were filmed on a cell phone, you would hear the person filming it just yelling "World Star." That's an internet reference that might date me.
And I think, you know, Barksdale was kind of getting clowned already because he was wearing a wig, or it was like a more of a toupee. This was not a ceremonial peruke or hairpiece. It was definitely a cosmetic thing to hide lack of actual hair. But apparently when he put it back on, he put it on backwards, getting kind of caught up in the melee of it all.
What's even worse is no one knew he was wearing a wig until
that's
then.
What I mean. Yeah, they were totally like, you know, mocking him. This is actually a moment that's often played for laughs in kind of physical comedy, you know, where a character, you know, will get
the
their
sitcom moment where the humor kind of quells the tension.
That's what happens, right? Yeah. It becomes more of like, oh, like that. Let's look at this dummy.
And you know, they have that pause and the music stops. They point at each other like, and then the other guy who was about to kill him is like, I guess that is funny. And then everybody starts laughing. And then it goes to a freeze frame, roll credits.
Yeah. Like a midair jump, you know?
Right. Like, high fives.
Oh, look at what are we doing, mm-hmm. guys?
Come on.
We love each other. Let's you go know, back to the business of running the country.
So we are going to call it a wrap. Thanks, of course, to our recurring guest, Alex Circa. And also, just so you know,
1990 something.
Yes, a fan of circumstance we are. We also want to point out that, of course, we're dunking on the United States here with the help of our research associate, Mr. Max Williams. However, it is very important for us all to know this is not a glass house situation. It is a glass planet. There are tons and tons of parliamentary fisticuffs and fights and brawls. I want to give a shout out to South Korea in 2020 when more almost 40 people got up in a tangle, like a massive fight. It happens more often than you think, folks.
Indeed. I mean, after all, you know, these people aren't somehow superior, supreme beings. They have just as many foibles and failings as the rest of us. In some cases, way more. So, you know, always important to remember not to put anybody up on a pedestal, least of all our humble politicians.
Our humble public servants.
Not very humble at all.
Our very humble, modest public servants. Also mm-hmm. good not to put canes to people's heads. As everybody's grade school teacher once said, use your words. Thank you, as always, to a super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to our own cane over the head, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quizster. Shout out to Alex Williams, composed this slap and bop.
Indeed. Thanks to Eve's Jeff Coates and Christopher Asiotis here in spirit. Ben, thanks to you for not coming at me with a cane, even though I see it in your eyes sometimes that you really want to.
I don't look at you as often as you think, man.
Whoa. Hurtful. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.